a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Burks? Gray?
Here.
Johnston?
Here.
Rave?
Here.
Teason?
Here.
Olson?
Here.
Roden?
Here. Quorum is present. You have the minutes. Are there comments or action? Moved to approve by Rave, second by Teason. Comments on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Minutes are approved. Just a couple reminders before we get into today's calendar. If you wish to testify, we'd ask that you sign at the podium by the front door. Also, if you have cell phones, you might want to check them and make sure they're in an appropriate setting. Pages. Who do we have for Pages Day? Stand up and introduce yourself. Watertown. What are you going to do after high school?
I plan on going to Augustana to study business and international studies.
Great. And are you acting as our other page?
Yes.
Well, you can stand right there and introduce yourself and tell us who you are.
Elizabeth Gold from Faith.
And who? I'm going to say... Who's your father? The infamous Eric Bogue. Okay, well, thanks for your help. Also, we have special guests today. Speaking of Eric Bogue and the Faith Country, we have the Faith Senior Class led by Diane Fishbach. And the Faith, half the Faith Seniors, I think. Why don't you guys stand up? Welcome to Senate State Affairs. Also, worthy of mention, the Faith basketball team, the boys' varsity basketball team, is undefeated. And I would like to announce that my son Reggie is the top scorer on that team. I'd like to, but I can't because it's not true. I think some of these guys might protest that statement. No, they're doing really well. Okay, any other announcements before we get started? Seeing none, we will start with Senate Bill 93, an act to provide the withdrawal of referred measures in certain circumstances. Senate Bill 93 is now open for public hearing and proponent testimony.
Good morning. I'm Senator Deb Peters, District 9, Hartford, Crooks, and North Sioux Falls. I brought Senate Bill 93 after reviewing. Excuse me, I'm going to hand something out so you can see what I'm looking at here. Here, you might as well. After looking through some of the issues through the Secretary of State's book and some of the laws that deal with the election laws and going through the petition process and things like that. So this is just a page out of the election book. And in going through this, there's a section that I thought was missing. For as easy as it is for the state of South Dakota to put things on the ballot, there's one piece that if you put it on the ballot, you actually can't take it off. There's no mechanism to take this off the ballot. So out of this sheet, it just shows some of the laws and the rules in place to put things on for initiated constitutional amendments, initiating petitions, and then the withdrawal of initiated measures and things like that. Senate Bill 93 deals with referred measures. If you look through the sheet that I handed out, there's a mechanism for putting things on the ballot, but when it comes to a referred measure, there's no mechanism for pulling it off. We in the legislature move pretty fast. If the people decide to put something on the ballot in a year it won't hit the ballot, but there's an intervening legislative session, we can still make the changes that the people have requested. And then if we do make the changes up here as a legislative body and the governor signs off on it, then there's no mechanism to pull something off the ballot if we've already dealt with the issue that was put on the ballot to begin with. So with that, I know it was a little confusing, but in short, it's not meant to be confusing. It's meant to be helpful to the people, so the ballot is not quite as lengthy if we happen to address the issue that the people brought before us and put something on the ballot. So with that, I'd encourage your support of Senate Bill 93.
Thank you. Further proponents?
to come on. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Senate State Affairs Committee, Aaron Lorenzen, Secretary of State's Office. It's a pleasure to be here for the first time this year, so thank you for that. Senator Peters brought this bill to our attention, and, well, we couldn't agree more. There seems to be the vehicle in place for an initiated measure and initiated constitutional measure, but not for the referendum process. So a little history behind it. In 2009 is when this legislature passed HB 1184, which provided for that withdrawal from initiated measure and initiated constitutional measure. So this just adds into law in case something were to happen and we have that question that comes in our office that says, what do we do now? So with that, I'll ask for your favorable consent, and I'll stand by for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents? Are there any other proponents? Seeing none, we will open to opponents, Senate Bill 93. Any opponents? Seeing none, questions from the committee? Senator Frerichs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Probably a question for Senator Peters. She might need help from her, from the home team there. If the, and it could be either one of you. It doesn't matter to me who answers it. If I may proceed, Mr. Chair. I think the question is, what if the, because we always know the last law passed is the law that's in effect. Is there any sort of mechanism already in place for, you know, let's just say if the legislature changes that existing law, maybe doesn't do the wishes or, you know, and go the route of what the citizens have referred to the actual law, but they actually change it different, change the law differently. Is there anything in place now? Because we know what the citizens would have referred wouldn't matter because it's no longer relevant because it's not the last law in that section of code that was passed.
Mr. Chair, the way I understand it, if the people put on the ballot to repeal a law that was passed by the legislature, and then the legislature comes in the next legislative session and messes around with it, whether it's for the good or for the bad, it is now, whatever's on the ballot is now irrelevant because what was put on the ballot no longer exists. So this bill now provides the mechanism for the sponsors of whoever put the bill on the ballot to begin with, allows them the mechanism to pull it off. Because if you don't have that mechanism, now you have an obsolete item on the ballot for people to vote on that has no merit or no basis for being there.
Any other questions? Senator Cutler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for anyone who can answer. I see that there is a mechanism to withdraw an initiated constitutional amendment, but I don't see that there's a method to withdraw an initiated measure that is not a constitutional amendment. If there is, can someone point me to the section that allows withdrawal of an initiated measure that is not a constitutional amendment?
Senator Cutler, I didn't read it, but on the first page it says 2-1 and 2.3. Is that not it? Withdrawal of initiated measure. Second paragraph on the back side from the top.
Mr. Chair, Senator, it follows from the bottom of page 1 to the top of page 2 on that handout. Aaron Lorenzen,
right.
Secretary of State's office.
Okay. Other questions? Senator Olson.
Question for Aaron. I mean, isn't that the reason that we had a gap or one more legislative session in between these is to allow the legislature to do the work of the people and come back in and make changes to perceived problems to make them better and so we don't have to have these things on the ballot?
Mr. Chair? Senator, yes. In hearing the testimony from 2009, that seemed to be the reason for it.
Any other questions? Brief question. Anybody, and I think you probably already answered this, anybody have an idea why this anomaly was in our statutes, why there wasn't provision prior to this?
I did some checking around and did some asking. I went down and spoke to a few attorneys that kind of had some expertise in the election law area or the ballot arena, and I spoke with the Secretary of State, and I know he's not able to testify today, but there is no history, and nobody knows why that this was missing. So, okay. And nobody's come forward yet to say that this isn't necessary, but I figured it was an interesting gap that we should probably provide a mechanism for.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, piggyback off that, my boss, I think, passed that legislation in 2009, so he might be the reason behind. So,
all by himself, he passed that legislation.
No.
Thank you. Any other questions? Any other questions? Seeing none, we will close and open to committee discussion and or action. Senator Rafe.
I would move to pass.
Motion to pass by Senator Rafe, second by Senator Olson. Comments on the motion? Senator Rafe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Only that I do think the intent was there. I've talked to several people. I myself believed that this was the case, and so when we found out that it wasn't, I think it's a good time to get it fixed and get it done before this summer arrives. So I'd ask for your support.
Any other comments? Any other comments on the do pass motion? Seeing none, the motion then is do pass, Senate Bill 93. All those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senators Cutler.
Aye.
Frerichs.
Aye.
Gray.
Aye.
Johnston.
Aye.
Ray.
Aye.
Teason.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Roden.
Aye. Motion carries. Senate Bill 93 goes to the floor with a do pass recommendation. We will now take up Senate Bill 104, an act to revise certain provisions concerning the investment of public land. Senate Bill 104 is now open for public hearing and proponent testimony.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gray.
If you'd allow me just to remain seated here, I would just do a brief introduction.
Granted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you remember last year, I brought a bill that allowed local governments to invest in different instruments. And so this year, Margo Northrup, who represents the Association of Rural Water Districts, did I get that right, Margo? Systems. She came to me and said, we need to clean it up just a little bit to make sure they can continue to do what they've been doing. And so with that, I would just ask her to come up and explain what the bill does.
Thank you. Further proponents.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Margo Northrup with the South Dakota Association of Rural Water Systems, and I bring this bill to you today to clarify the top types of bonding authorities that political subdivisions can invest in. Last year, as Senator Gray said, SCCL 4-5-6.2 was adopted, and that bill specifically allowed for political subdivisions, which would, like the water user districts and the sanitary districts, which are members of our organization, it allowed them to invest in direct obligations of any county, municipality, or school district, or also bonds issued by the Housing Development Authority, South Dakota Health and Ed, and South Dakota Building Authority. Well, there's also a statute that's currently on the books, it has been for a number of years, that allows political subdivisions, like the water user districts and sanitary districts, to invest in bonds that are under DENR, the Department of Environmental and Natural Resources. They would be conservancy district bonds. And so one of the concerns that DNR had, or that we've discovered through talking through some of this stuff, is what effect, if any, 4-5-6.2 has on that current authority that is already in place that allows us to invest in those conservancy district bonds. And so what we did is we just added a sentence at the end of last year's bill that says no restriction in this section limits the investment authority otherwise granted under the laws of this state. And so this would allow the water user districts to continue to invest in those conservancy district bonds like they've had the ability to do in the past. And I know that there's another dedicated investment period that will start this summer for conservancy districts that the water user districts and sanitary districts would like to be able to invest in.
Thank you. Further proponents? There any other proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents? Any opponents? Seeing none, questions? Questions from the committee? Seeing none, comments and or action? Senator Cutler.
Move to pass.
Motion to pass by Cutler, seconded by Senator Rave. Comments on the motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gray.
Just, again, briefly, merely cleanup of last year's legislation just so that the systems can continue to do what they've been doing for many years.
Any other comments? Seeing none, the motion then is due pass. Senate Bill 90, Senate Bill 104. All those in favor vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Cutler?
Aye.
Burricks?
Aye.
Gray?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Rave?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Roden?
Aye. Motion carries. Further action. Senator Cutler moves consent, seconded by Senator Johnson. Comments on that motion? All those in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Senate Bill 104 goes to the floor to pass on consent. For the benefit of the members of the audience, and particularly the senior, FAE seniors, consent calendar, when we put a bill on consent like we just did, it usually means that, well, it always means that there was no opposition from the committee, and it means that it was basically a no-brainer. So when this goes on the Senate calendar, we will put all the consent calendar bills, lump them together, and pass them with one vote. But if there's something in there that we missed, any one member of the Senate or this committee can pull that bill off consent and put it on the debate calendar. So we just do it to make better use of our time. With that, we will move to House Bill 1014, an act to prohibit false statements on applications for certain loans, grants, and other financial assistance, and to provide a penalty therefor. House Bill 1014 is now open for public hearing and proponent testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. My name is Tim Engel. I'm legal counsel and lobbyist for GOED. Hopefully I won't slow you up this morning. If you'd like, I could go straight to questions. House Bill 1014 is intended to bring the law applicable to persons and businesses applying for loans and grants, excuse me, from GOED and other state agencies in line with applicable federal law. Under federal law, any of us that goes and applies for a loan today would be guilty of a felony if we lied about the value of the collateral or lied about our net worth, basically. This bill is intended to bring state law in line with that as it applies to loans and grant applications to GOED and other state agencies. And that's all I have, Mr. Chairman. I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you. Further proponents? Any other proponents? Seeing none, are there opponents? Any opponents to House Bill 1014? Seeing none, questions? Any questions? Just a brief question. Is there any, we're adding a felony to this statute, but is there anything in here? I mean, I understand that what we're dealing with here would probably be, we'd be talking a lot of value or a lot of dollars involved, but is there anything that would put a minimum of the dollars we're dealing with since we're ramping this up to a felony?
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I may, a couple of things. One, under federal law, which this is patterned after, the federal penalty would be 30 years and $1 million fine. Now, of course, just because it's a felony and has a two-year maximum prison sentence, that doesn't mean that's what a person would get. Our thinking is that this is sufficient to make it a good deterrent, but not so substantial that it would scare away applicants. And you are correct, Senator. These are generally are pretty substantial loan amounts that we're talking about. You know, very few of these ready loans or but those types of loans are, you know, $10,000 or $20,000 loans. They're hundreds of thousands of dollars and sometimes millions of dollars. So we believe that there needs to be some sort of deterrent, you know, that's sufficient to cause people not to make false statements, but on the other hand, not make it as severe as the federal law. You know, as you indicated, sometimes that's not a good idea to follow federal law.
Any other questions? Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Engel, has there been a problem? I mean, we always, whenever you change, you make something a felony. Or is this something that South Dakota is unique in just catching this and changing it to a felony over our surrounding states that we compete against for these businesses and trying to recruit new businesses into South Dakota? Has there been a problem in the past with some applicants that have been acting out of character, out of good faith?
Yep. Mr. Chairman. Senator Olson, yes, we have had some difficulties. I would prefer not to discuss them specifically because at least, you know, in a couple of cases we have confidentiality issues with them. But I can tell you generally that we've had some situations where recently where we believe people have misstated the value of the collateral that they were bringing into the state and, in fact, in one case may have just not told us the truth about what they were bringing into the state. I can give you an older example, which is long past, and frankly, I can't remember the name, so I couldn't tell you anyway. But in the 25 years I've been doing this, I know of another case that I think would be a good example. There were some out-of-state applicants coming to South Dakota to borrow money to open a business here. The husband put on his financial statement that he owned a very substantial house somewhere in the South. He was only a guarantor. It was an unsecured guarantee. There was no reason to go double check on this particular issue, but it turned out that he did not own the house. His wife owned the house, and it was $1 million-plus house. The loan went south. We attempted to collect on the guarantee. He filed a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, and it turned out he did not own an interest in this house, even though he said he had. Now, we couldn't do anything about it because it wasn't a crime at that time. If this bill passes, doing something like that would be a crime. What's prompted it more recently is there have been at least two instances where we've had problems with this recently.
Other questions? Senator Elson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, you talk about default rates, and there's always the question of, you know, the private citizens that serve on these boards and commissions to oversee lending and at the state level. Do you know off the top of your head, or maybe Ms. Easlin would know, what the combined default rate is for all of the loans that you supervise as legal counsel for the state?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I can't tell you specifically, but my recollection is that it's less than the default rate for commercial banks. That's the person with the knowledge confirms that's correct. So it's very, very impressive. The boards and the staff do a great job of protecting the state's and the taxpayers' funds.
Any other questions? Seeing none, we will open to discussion and or action from the committee. Senator Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move to pass on House Bill 1014.
Motion by Gray, second by Cutler, do pass on 1014. Comments on the motion?
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Senator
thank
Gray.
You. I would just point out two things that make this that makes sense to me in passing this bill. We have a number of development programs in the state, and they're listed here. And these programs in the Economic Development Office and the Ag Department, and looks like Diener has one too, they're providing loans and they have programs that will help us drive our economy. And some of these people are out of state, some people are in state. Some of this is manufacturing and other businesses, some is ag related. And so they're good programs. They've been good programs. We've heard about the default rate, which has been outstanding. But ultimately what we're doing here is, as a legislature and the department bringing this forward, is being good stewards of those assets, which are essentially taxpayer dollars at work trying to drive our economy. So with that, I would just ask for your support.
Senator Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of things. First of all, I would think that if we really wanted to, we could find statutes that currently exist under which we could prosecute these violations. Still, I think it's a good idea to make it very clear to people that are applying that we do have this in place. And secondly, I would remind you that on line six, the words knowingly and willfully are included, which sets a high standard. This, we're not talking about somebody here that, you know, makes a mistake of adding numbers and comes up a couple hundred dollars off. This is a knowingly and willfully act to attempt to gain these loans. And so I think the standard is appropriately high to make this a felony. Thank you.
Senator Frerichs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think, I imagine a number of us at first blush have a little bit of concern on adding that felony, but something that's different, though, with this that I see, just as I'm listening to the discussion and definitely appreciate, the attorney sharing with us from his working with these people. But what's different I see with these businesses is oftentimes they might be out of state, and there isn't that personal relationship that many of our in-state businesses may have with their banker that they work with. And so in this circumstance, you know, these are people that in all reality are unknown in some cases to the state. And so I think it is good to know that we do still have limited dollars that we can invest in these type of ventures that we hope to bring into the state, and yet that we're going to be very judicious stewards of those dollars. So I think it makes good sense that way, but where I kind of see the difference compared to the more commercial lending that we may have here within the state for either expanding or existing businesses. So urge support.
Thank you. Any other comments? Well, I'll just make a brief closing comment, because I had kind of indicated to Mr. Engel that I have reservations and always do about adding felonies, but I think Senator Gray articulated very well my sentiments that notwithstanding the concerns of adding a felony, we have a pretty significant duty to protect the resources that our taxpayers of the state have given to the state, and I think this is appropriate. I think that they need the means to be able to ensure that people are acting in good faith and have a hammer hanging over them to ensure that that's the case. So I will support this motion. Any other comments? Seeing none, the motion then is do pass on House Bill 1014. All those in favor vote aye. Those opposed nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senators Cutler?
Aye.
Frerichs?
Aye.
Gray?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Brave?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Roden?
Aye. Motion carries. House Bill 1014 goes to the Senate floor with a do pass recommendation. With that is the end of today's short calendar. Don't get too used to these half-hour long state affairs meetings, because the pig is ready to start going through the python, so to speak, and we have a lot of bills coming up, and so we'll start seeing fuller schedules starting Wednesday. Wednesday, I believe, we will resolve the issue of if a buffalo gets in a fight with a coyote, which one wins, and a couple other more heavy-hitting issues like that. Yeah, we can have props in the committee. Any other announcements before we entertain a motion to adjourn? Moved by Teason, seconded by Rave to adjourn. Comments on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Meeting is adjourned.